did her hair up.
I don't know how Pauline did her hair.
Okay,
like
and
on the
fourth
July, she did red, white, and blue.
AGP?
We're all set.
We're all set? Are we all set? Microphone's on. Lean. Switch is back down there. Yeah. I guess I better get my agenda so I can see it. Call to order the regular meeting of the Oceana Community Service District Board of Directors for Wednesday, November 14th. May I have the call to order or the roll call, please?
Director Gibson?
Here.
Director Villa?
Here.
Director Rapogel?
Here.
Vice President Austin?
Here.
President White?
Here. We'll stand for the flag salute.
Attention salute. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Go to the agenda review. Are there any changes? I see some additions.
President White, members of the board, we have modified our recommendations in agenda item 8D. We have provided a modified staff report with the items that have been added to disbursement. The added warrants are for a total of $8,350.88 for the invoices that were received after the agenda was posted. This adjustment will increase the total cash disbursements from $305,864.36 to $314,511.72. And at the appropriate time, the recommendation would be for the approval of staff recommendations in 8B as modified.
Thank you. Anything else? Entertain a motion to approve the agenda.
I move that we approve the agenda with the revised item 8B. As presented.
My second. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Carries 5-0. Moving on to closed session.
Okay, noting for the record that there's no public here to make public comment. Board will adjourn to closed session pursuant to Government Code 54957. This is the public employment of the general manager, district engineer, or assistant general manager.
Thank you.
But how about a no dumping sign? I don't think that's a big, big deal. I don't know what else to address with that. If I have to put up my own surveillance or what is it that I have to do? I'm not just me. I mean, it's all of us in that
yeah.
block. And we all have the same problem, as well as we have the kids back there smoking their dope. And that's always been an ongoing problem since I was a kid. So I'd like to see something. I don't know if you can put a no trespassing, because I realize it's a county easement. But also, if not that, then why not a no loitering instead of no trespassing? It'll serve the same purpose, plus no dumping, and possibly in Spanish, no tira basura. Mm-hmm. Not a big deal, I don't think, but I'll leave it to you fine people to address that. And, maybe something can come up with this. Okay?
Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. Thank you very much.
Question, if I might.
Yes, I was
23rd, 24th, between what are your cross streets?
Between Paso Robles and Ocean.
And as a quick informational response, last year the board did adopt a number of policies that gives us the better ability to work with property owners and residents to work on spot areas. We're currently in the process of recruiting somebody to help with those exact issues. So, yeah, we'll be prepared really in the very near future to help address that issue.
Okay. Thank you.
And we'll try to keep it on the front burner for you.
So, Mr. Ogren, is signage something that we can do, or?
We have a program that's basically like an adopt-an-alley, and I don't see any specific problems with doing signage. We have to go back to, you know, are there poles that are owned? We have to look at it, but again, we established like the adopt-an-alley program, and it would seem to be generally consistent with that, and the policies are generally flexible, but yeah, we'll have to follow up and look at the details.
Make that a target area. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Oh, good evening. I wasn't going to say anything, but I did want to come tonight and meet everybody here. But he wants signs. We have signs in our area, no overnight sleeping. And we have campers parking right underneath the signs and staying overnight. So you want signs? I've got signs.
Thank you. Could we get your name, sir?
Pardon?
May I get your name?
Used to this, but I will get used to it. Joe Shacker, Security Court, Oceano.
Thank you.
I live over on Honolulu. We have a property there, and we have a home down in L.A. area. And as he is speaking, it's a matter of enforcement. It's not a matter of signs. Mm-hmm. Between 2 in the morning and 6 in the morning, and it's not just people camping overnight. They're living there. Right now, we have one particular guy, and he's tossed a ton of junk out on, Lake Avenue that leads in from Pier. And this guy constantly comes back, and he's got this stuff shoved in the bushes there, barbecue, mattresses. And the other part of this is it's sanitation. This guy has no place to dump his waste from this camper. And unfortunately, there's no facilities for homeless people. And unless there's some enforcement, I mean, we're going to end up like a third world country with the diseases and stuff that will start coming in here because, I mean, we have a large number of homeless in the area, which is, you know, it's a terrible thing, and you hate to say move down the road, but, you know, if you don't get the sheriff to enforce what's there, we're going to suffer some real problems, not only property values, but health problems that come from this kind of lack of enforcement and paying attention to the upkeep of not only our properties, but the cities and the counties. And one of the things I'd like to see done is a fence from that airport. There's some indents in there where they can park and they can bring this trash and just fence it, you know, because it's already a no parking zone. So why not just run the fence from the airport right down there where they can't park? And, you know, I know this county is a big county, and there is a lot of land, and maybe they can open up some places for these people to park instead of running them into the neighborhoods and creating these problems. And I see you all shaking your head, but I'd like to see the sheriff there at 2 in the morning to 6 in the morning running these people to where they could stay and have some sanitation and, you know, not have somebody chasing them out in the middle of the night. But you got to do something. You can't just sit here and shake your head yes. So anyway.
Thank you.
Appreciate
Thank you.
It. You do so.
Anyone else? Okay, then I will move on to special presentations and reports, starting with Tony Maraschino, field supervisor, operations.
Good evening, board. Tony Maraschino. Just to let you know, we have removed quite a bit of trash from that location between Paso and Ocean, and I do have a work order created for that regarding signage. That once I get a little break and the schedule, I've mentioned it to the GM, and we will talk about it. But I did create a work order for it, just so it's there, and it will get addressed.
Thank you.
So for the past couple of weeks, we've had 18 work orders, 14 USAs, 10 customer service calls, 2 call-outs. One was for a broken line. Both of them were actually for broken lines on the properties in the backyard. I'll give you an update for Lopez. Lopez is currently at 40.5%, which is 19,984 acre feet. We are still taking no state water. Lopez deliveries are at 280 acre feet, and year to date for the water year, we've pumped 177 acre feet, and we had no SSOs for the month of October. So we've also had meter reads, door hangers, continued sewer jetting, and the biggest project that was kind of time-consuming was Airpark Bridge. And there was a lot of lessons learned for me regarding parts, material, just overall scope of work. But the sewer force main is in place. Everything with the water main is in place. We got the sample back today, and we will do the final tie-in to the system and put it live either at the end of this week, depending on meter reads, or beginning of next week, and we're completely done. It actually went really smooth. We had one situation that set us back about 5 hours. We had a pipe that separated on us when we were tying into the existing water main. You know, lesson learned. But got it taken care of. It did stir up the system, caused some dirty water complaints. Other than that, you know, a really good experience. You know, the guys enjoyed it. We all did in one way or another. But any questions?
My only question would be that we, I assume, made our deadlines and everything, or we're making our deadlines without much challenge.
Once we're all done and set, I'm sure I'll be sitting down with the GM. We'll figure out how many hours it took us compared to what was allotted. We were definitely under our allotted time. I'm still assuming, you know, total time-wise, we're probably at 50% if you add up our hours doing it. You know, that's just my early assumption.
But thank you.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, if I could add a little bit, because I certainly want to compliment Tony and Jason and Casey for the work effort on Air Park Drive. And it's a, you know, a reminder for everybody. We went out to bid on that project as required by the Public Contracts Code. We are able to self-perform the project because we could demonstrate that our crews could do it less expensively than the bid that we had received. And so we will come back to the board with final cost tallies for the project closeout. But they are well ahead of schedule, and we are pretty conservative in our hour estimates. And I think that when it all is said and done, we're going to see significant cost savings by self-performing. And again, Tony talks about lessons learned. I think those tend to be, you know, the small things, the things that they learned on the job. The big review of it is that they've done a great job and, you know, really helped the county's contractor as well to make sure that this was done in a timely manner. All of the sheet piling has been pulled out of the lagoon so that the water is freely flowing again and everything. And it's, again, a job well done.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have quick question. Was there anything interesting found in the lagoon when it was drained?
From wheels to snowboards to...
snowboard?
Oh, yeah, they found a snowboard. bicycle, some tires. There's a few things. I'll talk to the guys when they dewatered it, because I got a few discussions here and there. But I'm sure there's a lot more that I'm not aware of.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you.
Seeing no one from the fire department, moving on to our general manager.
Thank you for my update. Start with staffing, and especially with reflecting on some of the public comment we've received. So we have, I think, received about 60 to 80 applicants for both of the vacant positions. Carrie's gone through initial review in order to identify up the top roughly 20 candidates who are eligible, and then used a point scoring system and working with Tony in order to refine down, seeking to interview about 10 to 12 people. So that's well on its way. As, again, a general reminder, on the operations side, the individual that we are seeking is going to be dedicated about 50% of the time for cleanup, waste disposal, and other coordination with property owners on some of those code enforcement issues. Transitioning then to the bigger picture of code enforcement, I have had the opportunity to talk on the phone with the new code enforcement officer who's being dedicated to Oceano, Mason, and Mason's last name slips me. We identified, as well as some of the constituents in the community, that on the corner of 25th and Laura Lane, which appears to be an old drainage basin, that somebody's putting in significant volumes of concrete. And so the county is following up with that as well as a code enforcement type of issue. And, you know, in general, this coordination with the county is going to be vitally important, because certainly the district has certain authority when it comes to waste management, especially with waste that's left in the public right-of-way, in the alleys, and in public easements. Our technical ordinance also gives us the ability to enforce waste regulations on private property. The challenge, though, is that we're not allowed to walk onto private property without a bench warrant. It's the county's broader authority then that we would seek to coordinate with on some of the more challenging code enforcement issues. And altogether, it really is going to require good coordination between Oceano CST, our Waste Management Authority, county's Code Enforcement Authority, and the county sheriff. And traditionally, if somebody who's not conforming to the requirements of living in a community, sometimes when individuals get action or are pursued by a single agency, whether it's us or by code enforcement, their responsiveness is just not as good as when multiple agencies are coordinating the effort. So I'm hopeful that with the county's appointment of a new code enforcement officer and for Oceano, that some of this coordination is going to pick up. And with the employment of the new individual by Oceano, I think we're all the agencies are working together. Commander McDonald came by real quick just to say he couldn't do a presentation. He was just coming back from Southern California. A number of them got deployed down into the fires, but has given us a quick update that most of the encampments along Rio Grande Creek have again been cleared, and a lot of the waste has been pulled out, but we know that it's a reoccurring challenge, so the county sheriff has had some recent actions that have helped. It's the issue of being diligent and continuing with them. Following up a little bit on Tony's operations report, at the Technical Advisory Committee for Lopez Zone 3 today, it was announced that the storage in Lopez Reservoir just went under 20,000 acre feet. As a reminder, our low reservoir response plan, which gives us the ability to store water in Lopez during drought emergencies, kicks in when two criteria are met. The first being is the reservoir is below 20,000 acre feet in storage, which just happened. And the second is that the Board of Supervisors declares a drought emergency. So we talked about the steps associated with that today. And in the basic approaches is that at the January meeting of the Zone 3 technical, the Zone 3 Advisory Committee. It'll be on the agenda for consideration of a recommendation to the Board of Supervisors to declare it the emergency. And because January is still going to be in the middle of the rainy season and we could get rain in January and February and March, that the advisory committee will be provided with criteria on which to base that recommendation. And much of it's going to be looking at, well, where does the reservoir stand? Because if we get a lot of rain, it's going to come up above the 20,000 acre feet. But again, it's going to be the January meeting of the Zone 3 Advisory Committee where that's going to be taken up. I also, on landscape maintenance and the board's recent actions in support of landscape maintenance, I did talk with Dave Flynn, who's the deputy director of County Public Works, and he and the director will be meeting with Caltrans in the near future regarding a number of issues, including Highway 1 revitalization project and the landscaping maintenance issue. So my goal is by the end of this week to follow up with a letter to County Public Works and reflecting on our conversation, asking for the contact information with Caltrans so that we can start directly dialoguing with Caltrans as well. And then the three bigger work efforts that I've been working on, the Five Cities Fire Authority and efforts to renegotiate the Joint Powers Authority. I meet with Chief Lieberman and the two city managers as follow-up tomorrow. And again, as reflected in prior board reports, I think we're getting close to recommendations on the funding formula. There's a lot of other work that needs to be done as well, but at least things are going in a positive direction right now. And then wrapping up on two of the work efforts associated with water resources, legal counsel and I drafted, legal counsel reviewed, provided comments, and then I distributed proposed contract amendments to the Zone 3 Technical Advisory Committee and introduced them at today's meeting. We really didn't get into much substantive discussion. We're going to try to hold a special meeting of the Technical Advisory Committee in early December to really look at the proposed contract amendments more closely. The idea being is that it's in order to get storage rights at Lopez. Throughout California, one of the biggest challenges of water resource management is the lack of sufficient storage. And here we have a facility, you know, right up the creek from us, nearby, that has a lot of storage capacity, but there's no contractual rights. So certainly seems to be an opportunity that changing words on paper will better utilize that facility and will maintain some optimism there. And then on Central Coast Blue, the recycled water project being led by the City of Pismo Beach and South County Sanitation District, I've been working with the other agency staff on putting together a technical memo and some fiscal evaluations about options of the sanitation district in helping to fund that project and help it move forward. And I'll be reviewing that with some of the other agency staff tomorrow. And both that and the Lopez contract amendments, after I get some initial feedback from the other agencies, I'll be distributing copies to board members just as an informational item. And that concludes my update. Be glad to answer any questions.
Thank you.
Any questions from the board?
Thank you. Okay.
There
will be public comment after a few more reports. Then I'll.
I mean,
well, there's more reports to go, and then we'll have public comment. Okay? Thank you. Oh, no problem. Okay. So move on to Board of Directors and Outside Committee reports. Shirley, I know where you were today at the water meeting.
I went as an observer to a meeting last week.
Oh.
But I have nothing to report. I went as an alternate.
Oh, okay. Eileen?
Well, the only thing that I want to report on is that I made it to the meeting there that the Cal Poly students put on to with a focus meeting to improve our community. And I was very, very impressed. there was like 20-something students there. The professor was very knowledgeable and very, he greeted everybody. I was just blown away on how professional it was. Our meeting was over an hour and a half. Our president here, Karen White, was present too. And so I encourage you, they're going to have three more meetings. So you guys out there, please do try to attend. They're going to do try to improve on the advertising, the promoting of the event. A lot of people didn't know about it, but hopefully our board here can help get out the word and also put it on our website. And I encourage you, because we need to improve our community, and these students are doing all this work for free. So let's take advantage of it.
That's it.
Madam President, if I, after the board reports, I did neglect to mention one other thing, but in following up with Director Villa's comments, Kent Harrison, who is one of the individuals on the Cal Poly team, I also met with him, and I produced a document for their work effort on the public facilities within Oceano, and gave him an overview of some of the efforts that are in the foreseeable future as well. So,
oh, very good. Thank you.
And Cynthia?
Yeah, I've had three meetings since our last meeting.
Aren't you lucky?
So the first one that I attended was the Integrated Regional Water Management, IRWM, Regional Water Management Group, RWMG, and they have a draft implementation list of priority projects for the next 5 years, I think. And our LID project is number 7 on the list out of 25. And then let's say county project with the Oceano 13th Street drainage project, that's number 5, so we're up there. This may change going forward, but that's where the list is right now. And I also attended...
Director Aplogo, I'm sorry to interrupt, but is there any chance you can read off the ones that were in front of us on that list? Because there were 6 projects in front of us, and when I looked at it, I just found it hard to imagine that we could have ranked any better than number 7, that we got the highest ranking for our LID project than we could have hoped for, because there's some pretty notable projects ahead of us.
So the number 1 is City of SLO, One Water SLO, then City of Pismo Beach, Central Coast Blue, Cambria CSD, WWTP Nutrient, it's probably supposed to be nutrient removal and efficiency improvements, Cayucas CSD Sustainable Water Project Phase 1, the Oceano 13th Street Drainage Project, Nipomo CSD Supplemental Water Project Final Phase, and then our LID project.
And all of those are significant projects. So for our LID project to rank, I think we were tied for number 7 with the Santa Rosa Creek Restoration Project.
Yes.
So that's a really good result, and Melanie Mills with Cannon Associates is the one who's been helping with us on that. And
thank you.
Thanks.
I also went to the WAC meeting, Water Resource Advisory Council
Committee.
And there was a presentation showing all the county environmental health webpage features that are available, including SurfSafe SLO, which is the beach water quality. There's also restaurant rankings and things. And then there was a presentation from the Ventura County Fox Canyon Groundwater Management Agency about advanced metering infrastructure and their water markets program. Advanced metering infrastructure is like a smart meter. It's mainly used by agriculture in their implementation. And it was interesting, the presenter said, farmers all want this on their neighbor's property. and then just today I went to the IWMA meeting, Integrated Waste Management
Authority.
And they talked about their upcoming forensic audit. their search for a permanent manager, their policies and procedures. I was a little surprised to learn that they're going to have on a future, as a future agenda item, developing bylaws for the board because they don't currently have any bylaws, which is interesting.
Oops.
And then they set all of the meetings for next year, which is going to be the second Wednesday of the month, every other month, starting in January.
Thank you. I didn't attend.
And I'm not a member of this group, but I attended the Zone 11A Flood Control and Water Conservation Meeting Committee. Zone 11A is the area from just past the city of Arroyo Grande to the ocean along the creek where people are paying extra property taxes to work on flood control. And after 12 years, they finally have the permits in hand to do waterway management on the creek channel. And it'll start if everything goes right, because the permits are there, the funding is there. It has to wait till the next dry season. But in 4 to 6 months, they will start by doing, they're going to do half 1 year and half the next. And it's not cleaning all the silt out of the channel, but it will be cleaning some of the silt and raising the levee, the top of the levees. And it's been a long time coming. I think you'd be very pleased if you listen to the people from the county who are working on this. They've been extremely dedicated in fighting to get the permits necessary to do all this, because it wasn't like one permit. It was like a dozen permits at least. Yeah. And would you like to add anything else? And when they pull the permits to start this project, they will have 6 years to do planning to deal with the Oceano Lagoon where Meadow Creek meets Arroyo Grande Creek. They have 6 years to put the planning. There's no funding to do what needs to be done, but they'll have 6 years, and it looks like they're going to have grants to pay for the studies that could make the whole system work much better than it does now. So,
President White, my understanding is that part of the permitting and this planning effort is that there is going to be some level, although it's hard to define, of restoration in the lagoons themselves. So our constituents from Security Court in that neighborhood may want to talk to the county about restoration efforts closer to their properties as opposed to some of the other areas.
Yeah. Anyway, that was yesterday. And the goats are gone. The goats have come and gone and eaten all the blackberries they could stand. And they're watching the weather forecasts, because if it looks like we're going to get a lot of rain, they will put the plastic on the channel on the south side. But they're waiting to see at this point, because there was a report that long-range weather forecast is it could rain or it may not.
Can you explain that? Put the plastic where?
Oh, they put big, long runs from 22nd Street to Highway 1 and Halcyon Road on the south side of the levee. They cover it with heavy visqueen, heavy plastic weighted down with sandbags. And the purpose of that, one of the purposes is so that if it does have some overtopping, it'll be able to overtop without washing the levee out. And that's the plan. Or if it protects the levee, even if the water is up to the top of it. Yeah. And so maybe it's going to rain this winter. And I will now open it to public.
Well, Madam President.
Oh, excuse me.
So, of course, I apologize. I neglected the single item that was probably the most important to update your board on, and is that the open house this Saturday.
Oh, yes.
So from 10 o'clock to 1 o'clock. We're sponsoring as well, along with the County Energy Group of County Planning Department, an Oceano open house. We've sent out additional postcards to remind everybody and encourage participation. The focus is on water, energy, and infrastructure and planning projects and programs. Category 5, who's prepared the draft local hazard mitigation plan, is going to be there. I'll be there to talk about our water resource reliability program. County Public Works will be there to talk about the revitalization project, the drainage project, and some of the work effort they're doing. The county energy team is going to be there. And I especially want to thank Nicole for all of the work that she has been doing on coordinating Saturday's event. It has really been an extensive amount of work that she's done, both in terms of coordinating with the presenters that I identified, as well as numerous others who are going to be have tables there and available to talk with the public. The handout shows some comments, and then the layout. I'm not going to name everybody who's going to be there, but a number of nonprofits and other organizations. We're having the event in order to provide information and education on the water, energy, infrastructure planning projects, to really engage with the community. It was good to hear the attendance at the recent Cal Poly event, and hopefully we'll have several people attending Saturday's event as well. So it's Saturday from 10 to 1, and we have the you know, the handout again that shows the arrangement and who's participating. In terms of board of directors roles, we have a greeting table, so hopefully the president and some will be there in order to help with greeting the individuals who come to mingle. And then Carrie and I will be at our table, and I'm not sure, Director Villa, your availability, but one of the areas that we are struggling a little bit is on the translation issues. And I want to speak to that real briefly, because a lot of the participants in the tables have been encouraged to have bilingual individuals to help with the conversations, and we're certainly going to be providing bilingual written materials. The 5 presentations, though, are all going to be really pretty quick, and we did research in order to see if we can have the headphones so that there could be automatic translation. I even contacted Charter and the county regarding the potential availability of some grant revenues to buy that equipment, and we just aren't having luck on any of those avenues. So my fallback is on the PowerPoint presentation that I have nearly completed. What I will do is produce both an English version and a Spanish version. Because with PowerPoint, you can have your slides and then notes on the bottom. So I'm going to write out everything that I intend on speaking. Of course, you know, you never speak exactly, you know, every word that you intend on speaking. But I'll make sure to provide that both in English and Spanish so that our Spanish speakers who show up will be able to follow the narrative, you know, with the handouts and be able to follow the primary points of the presentation. And so that's what we'll do for Oceano. And again, we're going to encourage everybody to meet the different staff from the different agencies at their tables, where there's going to be at least some better translation opportunities there. So we've been trying. It's for this particular type of an event, it's a little bit more challenging because the speakers are going to be very fast. It's going to be a relatively quick moving. The contrast is that if we move into, which I anticipate in 2019, community events where we're proposing significant recommended actions, like once we have our infrastructure plan and we start identifying what the cost impacts are and the rate impacts are, those types of town hall meetings where it's a single focus and there's a longer presentation, certainly we'll be able to do bilingual translations in those situations more efficiently than what we're looking at on Saturday. Again, different types of events lend themselves to translation easier or more difficult depending on the case. So the approach for Saturday is really to provide as much written materials as possible. And we hope for a good turnout.
Thank you.
Can I just ask which of our directors plan to be there? No, Aline and I will be there.
I will be there. You betcha.
Okay.
She's got a mission. Why don't you tell them what you'll be doing? Come on, Linda.
4 out of 5, Linda can't.
No? Okay. Okay. I would like to call now for public comment on special presentations and reports.
Hang out together.
Sir?
Joe Shacker, Security Court, Oceano. I guess it's a night of coincidence for me. Three items I'm very interested in the report about working with code control and waste management. Right at the end of my street, we have multiple families living in a tent for well over a year. I think I heard code control is trying to find someplace for them, but we heard that a year ago. There's also multiple families adjacent to the tent of, they look like abandoned motorhomes, two of them, multiple families. They're not really hurting anybody, but they're on county property and private property and on the street. The second issue of the work that's proposed for the creek is very good to hear, but I suspect raising the levee and not clearing the silt, and I know the willow weed is sacrosanct, that you can only cut a half an inch a year or a quarter of an inch a year, but that's really the issue there. I hope too much money isn't spent continually raising the levee instead of addressing the real problem of the silt and the willow trees. The third item of doing something with the lagoon is very encouraging, but over the years, every time we've had a lot of rain and flooding, they've had more studies, and they usually cost about $250,000, and they're usually just a copy of the previous study. So I hope the plan isn't just a plan that wastes more money, and I hope we can see real results and not just trimming a half inch off of the weeds. Thank you.
Could I answer any one little part of that? May I answer one little part of that? What you need to know is the mouth of the creek and the levee issue involves the steelhead, and it will not be just cutting some willows. I assure you that the National Marine Fisheries, who has mandated this, is pretty sure about what they want to happen down there. But I have hope. Anyway, thank you. Moving on to item 8, consent agenda item. Any questions?
Public comment on consent?
Public comment on the consent items. Do we have any public comment on consent? No public comment on consent? No. I entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion that we approve the consent agenda items as listed.
As amended.
Second.
We moved and seconded. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Aye. Carries 5-0. That was quick. Moving on to item 9. And should I call for public comment ahead of time, Mr. Minnery? It's listed that way on the agenda.
It's at your discretion. You could take public comment beforehand or at the end if you prefer.
I'd call on Brenda Lowe.
Hi, everyone. I'm Brenda Lowe from Cienega Seabreeze here in Oceano. First, I want to say that I called just today or yesterday and said, can you make the microphones a little louder? And it's 200% better. I can hear everything. And so however you did that with AGP or whatever, gosh, it helps a lot. So much better than all of us having to wear headphones since we're a senior community. This is really nice. Thank you. The other thing I wanted to say is that it has been really good to see copies ahead of time about the policies, procedures, rules and regulations that you're considering, that are just being introduced. We've been trying to figure out what the rules and regulations and policies, and all we could find on the website was about personnel type manuals and that kind of thing. So it really helps to see it, and I'm looking forward to hearing, to just saying thank you for making it open, public, getting it out there, and that you did make it a priority and are continuing to address. We just want to resolve kind of a issue of understanding, and we appreciate the progress that's being made. We've also gotten really good service in spite of disagreeing on something and working toward resolution. Luckily, we hadn't had any problems with our water system on the district side. We've repaired a few things on our side of the meters. For 2 years, things had been going really good. This last week, we had a new leak. It happened. We got a quick response out to see what the problem was. Was it our side or your side? And this time, it was a leak on the supply side of the meter. I guess that's the OCSD side. It was not a difficult repair. There was no street incursion at all. It went well, and we've gotten great service as usual. And then, you know, not to sound too much of a suck-up, but it is really nice to hear the progress. You know, since we got engaged, I just speak for myself, since we got engaged a year or so ago, kind of been watching and figuring out and that kind of thing and hearing the history of OCSD and so much change and so many challenges. And it really is kind of impressive to hear the level of detail, concern, integration between programs and agencies. I mean, it seems professional versus what I didn't live here at the time, that there was lots of turnover and stuff. But it's really nice to see things getting put in shape, being enforced fairly, and that kind of thing. So that's all I kind of wanted to say on behalf of Cienega Seabreeze, is that thank you. We do appreciate your making it a priority, keeping it on the future agenda, and we're looking forward to see what you do with the policies and how it's actually, we want to understand it so we know how our issues and concerns are going to come to a resolution for all of us. So thank you.
Thank you very much. Yeah, and I was remiss and I did not read. 9A is review and discuss of draft policies on district general matters, the board of directors and board meetings, with a discussion on rules and regulations and board direction as deemed appropriate. There. Call for any more public comment? Okay, we'll move forward on this.
Madam President, members of the board, and members of the public, I want to do some opening comments, opening remarks, and appreciate the comments from Ms. Lowe of Seabreeze La Cienega. Opening comments, we're not seeking approval of the policies today, questions, comments, and direction. I'm going to, basically, we're just going to flip through them one page at a time. There's some pages that I have some questions or comments on. Since repicking this up, I read through it again, and so I've identified some questions, not a lot, but if board members don't have any questions on a particular page, we'll just flip through it real quick and get to the next page. As is normal, when we do seek formal approval of the policies, we'll do so in a manner where we'll recommend that typos and minor language suggestions that I would be authorized to make those non-substantive changes with concurrence of legal counsel. And certainly any language types of issues that board members see, you know, please feel free to bring it up to us in due course. The hope today is we're going to focus in on, you know, the substantive portions of the draft policies I've identified lots of double periods and other things in the documents, and again, that stuff will be cleaned up. You know, overall, the approach, again, is to pick up the policies where we had really left off in 2017, to reinitiate going through all of the district's policies. And there's really two different approaches. One is we're using the CSDA, the California Special Districts Association's draft manual on the development of the policies. And we've sought board's prior support on that, because it provides consistency with other special districts and consistency on policies throughout California. And as the CSDA updates their policies, then we can look at how do we need to update our policies as well. Their draft policy manual really covers a lot of the big picture, broad scope things. They do drill into personnel policies, which will be good to update ours. But their CSDA policies don't get into a lot of the rules and regulations. And the way I characterized it in the staff report is that the CSDA policies are really a lot about our internal business practices, our personnel policies, the conduct of the board, general matters. And rules and regulations are really a lot about our external business practices. How is it that we relate to our customers, whether it's new applications or new development, or enforcement types of issues. So that's, you know, that's the general distinction. And of course, there's always overlap. When we do move forward, as we are moving forward, I will be taking lead on rules and regulations, and then Carrie is going to take the lead on the next series of the CSDA policies, which is to the personnel-related policies. And a lot of that is going to make sure that they're in conformance with our memorandum of understanding with the union, as well as a number of other different items. Our next meeting, we've already discussed, is going to be talking about goals and objectives of the district. And in that meeting also then, for moving rules and regulations forward, I'll be talking about where do we want to prioritize the various rules and regulations. And certainly some of the special relationships that we have with multifamily establishments, whether it's the mobile home parks or some of the others, are going to be a priority. But in terms of looking at the rules and regulations again and establishing priorities of what are the details we want to address first versus what we're going to address later, will be the topic of the next meeting. And so in moving forward with this review tonight, I'm just going to reference the various pages. So on page 12 of the staff report, I identified six different bullets that were part of board discussions the last time. The time and date of regular meetings, that's on page 54. And actually, that was enacted by your board. That's why our meetings start at 5:30 now for closed session, start at 6 o'clock for open session. When we get to page 54, your board can discuss whether or not you're fine with the current schedule. We happen to set the current schedule based on a director who is no longer a director. So, again, if your board wants to establish different meeting times, it would be a good time to talk about when we get to page 54. Agenda items related to quasi-judicial actions or enforcement actions. The prior board tentative direction was to conduct those during special meetings. Regular board meetings will typically look at two, maybe three agenda items in order, you know, in the time that we basically have available for a regular meeting. And on quasi-judicial enforcement actions, the prior tentative direction was for special meetings. And the part of that was to make sure that whoever the constituent that we're working with really has adequate time so that we can focus in on those issues, not get distracted by other issues, and then or not get distracted by the district's normal business and meetings and really focus there. It also gives in the case where they might have legal counsel attending an opportunity to meet during the day and schedule a special meeting around the needs of the constituents. We got into some discussion. It's going to be page 44, director requests for agenda items. And there's some special consideration there that we'll talk about. Communication between the general manager and individual board members, including distribution of information and analysis. And we've had some recent discussions Public Records Act, which will be germane to tonight. Evaluation of consultants, that essentially was deleted based on prior board direction. We hire consultants on mostly a case-by-case basis, and we go through an RFP process, but direct board evaluations of consultants just didn't seem appropriate. And that's been a deal. And then board member training for the National Incident Management System we talked about. We haven't implemented anything, but NIMS is all about how do we respond in emergencies and what is it that elected officials should be trained on. And Camp San Luis and the training programs that are going on there seem to be our best opportunity to do some emergency training with board members. I would propose, if unless board members have any questions, to just sort of jump into the draft policies, which start on page 21 of 102.
I had two questions on the table of contents. I'm sorry, you can't okay. even get into the. One of them was, it's 2410, use of makeup time. I just didn't understand that, and 2515, unauthorized voluntary absences. I didn't quite understand. That sounded like an oxymoron
okay.
or something.
So starting on page 14, what I included in the agenda package is the table of contents of the CSDA
yeah.
policy handbook. We haven't gotten into any of the Series 2000 policies, though.
Okay. Well,
that's going to be what Carrie's addressing.
Then we can discuss it later. It's not important. I just was just kind of... Unauthorized voluntary absence. It's just trivial. Let's move on.
Yeah, again, so those will be addressed during work on the personnel policies
okay.
when they come
yeah,
up.
Yeah, let's just move on then.
So page 21 starts the general policies, the Series 1000, purposes of board policies. What you see is the highlighted in yellow is language that I pulled out of the existing bylaws. I don't have any comments on this particular one. And seeing no board comments. The next page is policy 1010, adoption amendment of policies. Again, it seems pretty well laid out to me, and I didn't have any comments or questions unless board members do. Next page, 23, conflict of interest policy 1020. And it's on 11.4 where it talks about the basic rule is that an elected official can find themselves in an incompatible office. You can't hold two elected offices at the same time. And there is some attorney general opinions also that a city council member, not a CSD board member, but a city council member cannot sit on a county planning commission. And the idea is that the incompatibility of the offices might have to do with annexations. That a city council is going to consider an annexation from an unincorporated area, a county planning commission is going to have a similar consideration but wearing a different hat. So under 11.4, what it says in the last two sentences is that if an elected official finds themselves to be in an incompatible or contradictory type of a position, that the discharge of the duties of the two offices by one person is incompatible, the official must step down from one of the offices. And what I need to do here is follow up with legal counsel on a question of law, because my understanding is sometimes it's not the individual's choice. That, for example, we have the two mayors who were recently or apparently recently elected to Arroyo Grande and Grover Beach, both of whom were city council members. It's my understanding that as a matter of law, when they win the election, they automatically abandon the other office. So I want to, again, work with legal counsel on this particular provision because I can imagine that there may be situations where the individual has to make a decision on what they're going to step down from, but there might be other situations where it's just as simply as a matter of law. So I'll work with legal counsel on that and make sure that we get appropriate language in there. And I'm not sure if board members have other questions on conflict of interest policy. That a lot of it is reference to existing law. You know, sometimes in policies, it becomes a question is why do we repeat what's already in law? Because the adoption of a policy, you can't change law, right? And so really by having some of these things in here as in a policy manual just simply helps remind us all of what we need to be doing, even if it's, you know, it's not a policy discretion of your board. It's something we have to do. The next 10:30 on public complaints. I highlighted a section in the third, which is the, you know, the general protocol is that complaints are dealt with at the lowest level. They jump up to the general manager. If somebody who has a complaint isn't happy with me, they can request consideration by a member of the board, typically the vice president, the president or the vice president. But in our language, we also included subject matter assignment because we at one point in time had an assignment on complaints and customer relations. So we just simply have that included in the policy that if the board has an assignment for that particular responsibility, then it can be the president, the vice president, or whoever is assigned by the board to work on customer complaints. Next policy is 1040, claims against the district. And my only comment there is that on cost of claims or repairs where we understand already that we damaged somebody else's property, maybe we had a water break, and that water break caused some flooding of a garage, and it's less than $500. It allows me to, just as the general manager, to deal with those very small items. If they're more than $500, then the constituent has to file a claim. These are relatively low dollar limits and far below my purchasing authorization, but the importance of having low dollar limits there is that it's important to inform your board if the district has created damages against others. So that was my only comment on that one.
I have a question about yes. The blanks in policy number 1040. In the first paragraph, the district's code section blank, and then on the next page, towards the middle, insurance deductible currently blank dollars.
So my thought there is on the drafts, I haven't done the cross-references. And in part of it, some of the other we might end up adopting these policies before we adopt the other ones, in which case I might need to modify the language to delete the blank and make a language change that says that, you know, like are separately provided in board policies or by district ordinance rather than a specific reference. On the second blank, on the insurance deductibles, I think that one we'll probably need to modify. Carrie looked up our insurance deductibles today just to double-check them, and it depends on the nature of the claim. So the deductible associated with an automobile claim is going to be different than a deductible associated with maybe general damages. All of our deductibles are actually really low. When we seek insurance, we're going to see if we have a little bit higher deductibles, can we get lower premiums? But there's a number of different deductibles, so I anticipate the change in language there is going to say the applicable deductible based on the type of the claim.
$10.50.
Yes. Copying.
There was a time when this board spent two or three board meetings on the issue, and I wondered if the price has gone up.
So at that point in time, the board adopted a policy of 20 cents a copy. And when we discussed this last year, your inclination was to stay with the 20 cents. I'm completely fine with the 20 cents. The reality is today, very few public records requests result in hard copies. Almost everything is electronic now. And so, you know, we don't charge for public records requests on electronic transmission of documents.
So 25 cents might be more realistic because you're doing less of it and it costs more to do.
Well, and there's, and so the part of the direction we really have is sort of a reasonable cost, which gets down to just the photocopying cost, right? Our costs associated with public records requests can be very significant, but those have to do with researching and going through the files, and that stuff's basically not reimbursable. So it's a pretty nominal issue, whether it's 20 cents or 25 cents. It's not going to come close to covering our real costs in terms of responding to public records.
Do we even need to list a number there? Can we just say a reasonable cost?
I think we need to list a number.
Yeah, we have to.
How much?
Pardon me?
We have to say how much.
Yeah, we're supposed to.
How much does a copy cost? I don't know. I made copies of all.
25 cents is that's reasonable.
Yeah, it's pretty standard in that.
Okay.
What we're really doing is, if there's going to be a large volume of hard copies, then we want to be able to provide the estimate to the individuals in advance. You know, we say this is a $500 page document. If you want a hard copy, mm-hmm. that's going to cost you 20 cents a page, and it's going to be pretty expensive. So we do have an obligation to provide them an estimate up front. And again, it's normally applicable to large volumes. Electronic, transmissions, though, don't cost. The other thing we do in order to try to reduce costs is simply to invite them in and let them review the records. And we can do that. We always have to be a little bit careful if it's something that's litigation related, because we want to make sure that they don't review documents that are privileged. But we have one of those outstanding right now where we're able to provide a partial response to an individual, and I can't remember what the example was. Hazardous materials. Somebody who is asking if we have any records on hazardous materials on a private property. So we looked through that particular customer's records. We found nothing. We did a review of some files. We found nothing. And basically are inviting them to come in and look through the files if they wanted to. So,
thank you.
So without any other comment, that 25 cents will be changed to 20 to reflect the existing policy.
Well, it can stay at 25.
I don't know if the board has a preference.
Leave it as is.
Leave it back. 25.
Okay. Policy 1060 on public contributions. I'm going to edit this slightly to make sure it reflects cash contributions, but non-monetary contributions must receive approval and acceptance by the board of directors. The idea is that people can't just give something to the government. The government has to accept it, because if somebody, what would be the favorite thing for somebody to do is to give us a piece of property that has a whole bunch of hazardous materials on it, right? And say, here it is, it's yours, So, it's pretty clear. Non-monetary contributions must receive approval and acceptance by the board, and we'll make some modifications to make sure that that's really addressing cash contributions. 4005, operating principles of the board and norms. I didn't have anything on the first page, again, a blank policy that we'll work with. Under the second page, under 14.2, members of the board of directors shall not attempt to pressure and or influence staff decisions, recommendations, workload schedules, and priorities. But then I'm thinking, well, when we're all sitting here right now, what are you supposed to do? Because I think you do, influence staff direction, board priorities. So what I was thinking about here is members of the board of directors shall not attempt to independently pressure and influence staff, right? Because it's really, as a board as a whole, that's your job. But I was just going to insert independently. The other comment I have that I don't really think necessitates an edit is under 14.1. The Board of Directors recognizes that the primary function of staff is to execute board policy. So I'm not sure that that's really true. It is an important role of staff to execute board policy. But in this whole separation of government and separation of duties that we have in our democracy, the primary function of staff is to manage the district and to operate district facilities. I mean, that's, you know, those are the assets, those are the services we're providing, you know, and to execute board policies. But you know, that's just a little minor point. I don't know that it really needs an edit to it, but.
I just want to make a quick comment because the term independently, I know what Pavel's getting at. However, it does leave open that two of you can go and pressure. So maybe it would be something to the extent of outside of regular meetings district business meetings or something a little more broader so you can't gang up on Carrie.
Well, I think 14.1 needs to be rewritten, too.
Just like what Pablo said.
What Pablo said. I think it needs either add something to it or, you know, a primary function. Other primary functions are dot, 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 dot.
So I didn't have any other comments or questions on 4005.
Well, we have the clear definition of shell in here somewhere.
So our approach is that we will, thank you for mentioning that again, in somewhere we're going to get in the language that wherever shall is included in our documents, it's mandatory. Yeah. I've been using must in a number of cases where I really like the word must better than shall, but we'll also make sure to have that general statement that shall is compulsory and not discretionary.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Forty ten Code of Ethics. It's the third bullet, the third check mark. The needs of the district's constituents shall be the priority of the board of directors. When a director believes he or she may have a conflict of interest, legal counsel shall be requested to make a determination if one exists or not. And so that's a little bit for legal counsel to comment on because legal counsel's primary role is, of course, to advise the district as a whole and not either me or other individuals. So, John.
Okay. Thank you. So, generally speaking, each one of you independently has to make a determination if there is a conflict. So what my general approach on this is that I will assist the directors to understand the issue and understand whether it appears that there's a conflict. Sometimes there is an appearance of conflict where I've actually asked members of board, do you feel conflicted? Because if they feel conflicted, to me, they have a conflict anyway. So if they feel it's compromising, there's something that's compromising their ability to make a decision for the best interests of the district. So overall, what I would change this to is that legal counsel shall be requested to assist board members in understanding the issue to make a determination if one exists or not, something like that. Because I have had board members in the past where I say, ooh, it feels like you have a conflict, let's look into it more, and they've said, no, I don't have a conflict. And so I'm not going to, if that's their determination, I'm not going to tell, I'm not going to insert my my opinion on that particular individual. So I'll work with the general manager on that language.
Yeah.
What if a member of the public raises an issue that they think a director has a conflict? Is that something that we could address in this paragraph?
Yeah.
It might be worthwhile is something in regards to, and maybe this is in the section with complaints against the district that we just passed, is that we have a policy that members of the public who have concerns about conflicts will first raise it with the general manager prior to filing an FPPC complaint. I don't know if we can directly say that, require that or not, but I think as a matter of policy, it's helpful to have an opportunity to resolve an alleged conflict before you get the FPPC knocking at your door. So we could certainly look into that.
Yeah, suggest that as a mechanism.
Yeah, I think that might. And it does create an avenue to exhaust their administrative remedies on it. So that might be helpful.
Thank you.
Yeah, I like that one. And whether it makes sense to include it in the complaint policy or whether we find another policy where we think that would fit appropriately, we'll work together in order to see how to address that. It's the fourth bullet that I have, just a final comment. Again, similar to the prior one where it says the Board of Directors' primary responsibility is the formulation and evaluation of policy. Routine matters concerning the operational aspects of the district are to be delegated to staff of the district. I propose to change that, are the responsibility of the staff of the district, because it's your board, for example, Tony and his licenses or certifications to the state, he has the responsibility for operating the system. I can't delegate that responsibility to him. Your board can't delegate that response. It's what he has through his certification. So, again, I think that minor edits to change it from to be delegated and are the responsibility would make sense in this situation. And then on the next page, the second bullet that says, in presenting items for the discussion at the board meeting, see policy something, and I didn't see any reference. I think that's might just delete that one unless somebody sees a good purpose in that particular bullet. Moving on to 4015, this is voluntary candidate expenditure ceiling. And the CSDA policy, which is highlighted in gray there, talks about some of the Proposition 208 and some ability of the local special districts to attempt to try to create some expenditure ceilings on candidacy issues. The prior direction from the board was just to not even address it. We don't have big, huge fundraisers that go on for our elected offices, so unless anybody wants, I don't even know what Proposition 208 is all about, but unless there's some, you know, board direction to research voluntary candidate expenditure ceilings, we'll just not have one. And move on.
Yeah,
move on.
You know that one? Oh, so then the next one, attendance at meetings and teleconferencing. Jeff's going to provide some rules just so that we... insert him here. And so...
That's like posting? Posting at the meeting place and...
Yeah.
Yes, it's like that. You have to be in a place where you can, you know, you could be at your hotel... in Tahoe, but you gotta open the door when it's public comment and you know, post it on the door, things like the one thing that you would want to know is that, say you're at your hotel in Tahoe or something like that, the agenda has to identify where that particular person is by address, so you may not. That may change your opinion on it if you're in somewhere. So anyway, those are things we'll put in there for discussion.
Well, I think the history of this board, the telecommunicating, has been when people or people's family were in the hospital. So it really, you know, it's not a motel in Vegas. It's a hospital conference room at a Roy Grandy. Or, I mean, so it does need to be spelled out. But, I mean,
And I think earlier in the year, the sanitation district slipped on this particular one. But, you know, Jeff, I should have asked you this before. Is it required that the board allow teleconferencing?
No.
Okay. So then the question becomes, there would be situations where I think it can be envisioned that teleconferencing is important. Especially my understanding was a prior example is that a board member was in the hospital. So it wasn't ambulatory, but still had all of their functions so that they could, you know, review agendas and discuss and everything. Okay, so I guess the idea is there is if the board members right now have any, you know, inclinations, because Jeff points out, you know, you have to be here to act unless there's a good cause for absence, and is are there conditions under which you might envision what are not good causes for absences? Like, I happen to be on vacation in Switzerland. Well, I don't think that's really going to work.
Well, but this does apply to special meetings, too, so it's possible there could be an emergency special meeting when you're on vacation in Switzerland.
Yeah. Oh, where you've already had it pre-planned. Yeah.
You're already there when the meeting is called.
I think it's good to allow it to have that as a possibility.
It has flexibility in there, yeah. So I guess the idea is with language like this, we would give the benefit of the doubt to the director, right?
Well, I think it needs more language. Yeah.
Oh, in terms of the, you know, the reading, the requirements as permitted by law get into a lot of the posting requirements, having to make sure that the meeting location is accessible. You know, it's a public place generally, unless it can't be.
It seems to me like the requirements are onerous enough that people aren't going to do it unless they have a good reason to not be here.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I'm good. I just some little bit of discussion and ready to move on. 4025, which is expenditure reimbursements. In this particular one on travel, it doesn't identify the need for pre-approval. There's a separate policy where the pre-approval on travel, like going to conferences, if board members are going to go to conferences and travel, it has to be approved by the board as a whole. And so I can get the pre-approval language in here, too, to reflect where it's at in another spot. But what about mileage to meetings? You know, what kind of meetings? So your board members, you go to RAC meetings, IWMA meetings. And my thought is you have a whole bunch of meetings where you've been identified on this list of committees and subject matter liaisons, and the way that I read it right now is that you would be eligible for mileage reimbursements. And
bookkeeping nightmare.
Yeah, I prefer not to do any paperwork for that.
Not that you would ever be required to submit a mileage reimbursement, and I know there's years gone by when I forgot to submit stuff and I didn't get paid for it. But the difference between an individual director's discretion not to do it is different from should a director be able to seek mileage reimbursement if they so choose.
I think they should, because you don't. It could be a hardship.
Yeah.
I mean, it could be a hardship for a board member.
And have directors ever gone to out-of-town meetings or anything to be reimbursed? Has that happened?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, in the past. In the past, they went to leadership training, for instance.
So let's be clear, though. On leadership training and conferences, those require pre-approval by the board.
Yeah.
But it's the other meetings that you're attending. And, you know, the real thing is simply mileage. So
can we specify that it's for meetings at locations that are X miles from the district, or put some limitation on it that it only applies to longer distance travel?
Somebody had to go to to Santa Barbara, for instance.
Well, so we don't have any committee meetings that are going to go to Santa Barbara, right? Now, all of our committees are here, but you do have a number of meetings that are in San Luis Obispo. You can have CSDA meetings that are up in North County. So maybe what we do is we say that any travel outside of the county would require Board of Directors approval. If the meetings are within Oceano, you know, then it's not subject to reimbursement.
Yeah, maybe make it optional if you're going to San Luis or...
Outside of the district's boundaries,
right,
but
right.
Within the county of San Luis Obispo.
Yeah.
Yeah. That means I won't get paid for coming from to Halcyon from here. I mean, I just...
Okay, that's... I appreciate that clarification.
Yeah, personally, I'd be fine with not being reimbursed within the county for any meetings. Like you said, it's kind of a bookkeeping nightmare. It's kind of a bookkeeping nightmare. And it's a small amount of money. So it's only 15 miles away. So I'm fine personally with not having that as a reimbursable expense.
I've never collected it. Keeping track of it would be too hard for me.
Yeah, so it'd be individual option.
I think you should put it in there as an option.
Yeah,
for
I think.
Okay. Whoever
I think
wants
it should
it.
Be in. I think it should be in because,
yeah, it's only fair for some people.
And you don't vote on it, so when you do vote on these things final, if you so choose to debate it and vote a certain
okay.
way, then you can do it then. So, under 4030 for remuneration, the $100 for each regular or special meeting, $50 for each committee meeting. I want to clarify because, again, in your committee and subject matter assignments, we have committees that are formal committees. Those are what we've traditionally applied the $50 rule to. The subject matter assignments, we traditionally haven't applied the $50 rule to. So it's committees where you have a formal vote, whether it's RAC or the Regional Water Management, Zone 3 Lopez, Oceano Advisory, Five Cities Fire, the Sanitation District. I just want to make sure.
Oceano Advisory?
That's a formal appointment, yeah, by a board member. So
I know.
The board members who are appointed at large would not apply on Oceano Advice. It's the board
okay.
member who's appointed by Oceano.
Okay.
$40.35.
No.
No health benefits. Anybody want to try to pursue that one?
No.
Hearing none, we'll move on. $40.40, officers of the board, duties of the board. I didn't... On the second page, the item number 2 says that the president will sign the minutes of the board meeting following their approval. We never do that because it's documented in the minutes. We were going to scratch that unless Jeff says it's legally required. I didn't have any other comments, though, on 4040. On 4045, where it says district secretary, sometimes the statutes talk about the district clerk. And so I'm looking at identifying that the district secretary and the district clerk are one and the same. Interchangeable, make a clarification there. 4.2 is important because we do summary minutes. We don't get into all of the discussion. If we have a quasi-judicial and enforcement action, then we will have detailed minutes on those. But under 4.2, the point here is that if a board member wants to make sure that their comments are included in the minutes, then you have to do it during the meeting. And so the normal statement from a board member is going to be, let's say it's a 4-to-1 vote on a particular matter and a board member just can't vote yes, they're going to vote no. sometimes that board member will say, as a matter of record, I would like to have the following statement included in the minutes, you know, like an explanation of why I voted no on it. Now, that's not the only example, but again, deliberation on various items, sometimes board members will want to make sure that their position or their statement is reflected in the minutes, and the importance is you do that during the meeting that it's being deliberated. Once the minutes have been produced, you know, you can't really kind of go back at that point in time that said, hey, you know, I made that statement, I want it reflected. So 4.2 says, it's kind of like, you know, speak up now or forever hold your peace type of statement.
Can't rewrite the minutes.
Right. And 4.4 explains that when it comes to quasi-judicial proceedings, then we will have more detailed minutes. 4047, district treasurer, we'll fill in the blanks and everything. We have that existing policy, and Carrie complies with all those requirements. Forty-eight, legal counsel and auditor. I didn't have anything really there. 40-50, members of the board of directors. Under 6.2, it's just a sort of the reminder, as individuals, directors may not commit the district to any policy, act, or expenditure. Under 7.9 on the next page, and I think this sort of had been inserted into the district bylaws at some point in time in the past because there was a district board member who took litigation against the district. But I think the language might go a little bit too far. If a director enters into litigation against the district, it will be presumed that said director has a conflict of interest on all matters presented to the board for discussion and action. And that policy says, hey, if you sue the district, you don't get to be a board member anymore, right? You're conflicted out of everything. And I, you know, again, I'll need to work with legal counsel, but I think the more appropriate language would be a conflict of interest on all issues relating to the litigation. So I think we have to narrow that down a little bit. The current language says that, you know, it's everything. Then on the bottom of the page, this was, I want to sort of reiterate an area that we had a fair amount of detailed discussion on. And this is when board members request to have something on the agenda. And we spent a bit of time on this to really craft it. What we were observing is that with some other agencies, individual board members were really kind of creating agenda challenges by demanding things on the agenda that really were not part of the overall board's direction to the general manager, city manager, as the case would be. And the intent of this language here is really that if a board member says, Pablo, I want something on the agenda, and that works within the existing priorities and what I'm working on, then the answer is great. You know, we'll have a discussion about the timing, but try to get that item included on the board agenda with a staff report in a timely manner. In the event that a board member wants something on the agenda, but it's not aligned with what my current direction is, based on the board's, like we're going to talk at the next meeting about objectives and priorities. Then instead, I put it under future agenda items, and the board member who wants to talk about it then, under future agenda items, can convince the rest of the board that, hey, this particular item is a high enough of a priority that we really do need the general manager to be working on it, regardless of what we have talked about in terms of our other priorities. That way, there's never a yes-no type of a situation. Instead, it's a situation where, you know, if I can make the finding that, hey, that request aligns with what we're doing and it's part of our marching order, then we're going to work it in and get it on the agenda with staff reports and everything. But if it's something that just isn't is outside of the existing workloads or scope or board priorities, then it's really a discussion for the board as a whole, and the requesting board member gets to, you know, talk amongst the five of you about priorities and everything. So that's the basis behind crafting that particular language. On the next page, which is page 45, we have a recent example that I want to bring in. And we also have an email from Julie Tacker regarding some recent communications. On this page 45 of 102, the 1, 2, 3, 4th paragraph, that information exchanged before meetings shall be distributed through the general manager, and all directors will receive all information being distributed. And that is speaking specifically to the item of items that will be on the agenda. There's some contrast in Ms. Tacker's email. She questions when correspondence has been she has a recommendation that when correspondence has been transmitted from the general manager to any one director, all directors are copied so that all directors are afforded equal information. And having a strong policy like that I find problematic, because and there's a number of situations. I always have to be conscious about when I am emailing board members to make sure that I don't conduct a meeting and violate the Brown Act. So to say that in all situations all board members are going to be CC'd puts me in a risk of creating a violation of the Brown Act. So I have to be careful in terms of judgment. Also, I'll have correspondence with less than a quorum of your board when it has to do with committee issues or ad hoc committees. And I really need to stay focused with those particular board members when I'm working on ad hoc or committee types of issues, again, to make sure that I don't run into Brown Act violations. And so this policy, as it's currently written, is anticipating, though, that we are leading into a discussion of the board as a whole. And that it's anticipating, one is that it's only information, right? And I always blind copy, I never carbon copy. I shouldn't say never, because sometimes mistakes happen, but it's rare that I would CC the entire board. And the reason for blind copying on distributing information is to help prevent board members from communicating with each other on a Brown Act. But even then, I have to be careful, because I can still be that spoke in a wheel where I get communications from all five different board members that says, hey, you should do this, or you should do that, or you should do the other thing, and I've created an informal meeting. Because now I'm going to go decide to do something because a majority of the board says that I should do it, and I've never gone into a board meeting. So I think that having, the hard and fast rule that all board members need to be copied on communications is just one that would be a risk of walking us into Brown Act violations. And so I do like the existing language. And wanted to sort of bring this up on this particular case. Also in Ms. Tacker's email, there was a question of, and this related to some recent correspondence from a constituent that had issues going on at the sanitation district. Vice President Austin was our representative. I forwarded emails to her so that she was aware of what was going on. But again, because it's a committee or a limited scope, but the email just went to Director Austin. And it was predominantly an issue that was having to do with the sanitation district and not with this board. So I never anticipated that it would be an agenda item for your board to be discussing. But this communication that she has asserting that in forwarding the information to a board member that I should redact all personal information, I don't really see under the public records records retention, where I really have the authority to redact information. And in fact, to set a policy on redacting information seems to conflict with, I have to follow the legal requirements on redacting information when we do have public records requests. So, you know, I can understand that sometimes correspondence gets a little bit testy out there. But the idea is we put things in writing. We have to, kind of anticipate that they're going to be shared. My last comment, though, really on what Ms. Tacker asked me to share with your board as a whole during today's policy discussions is that I don't really even see the email itself as being a personal email. All of the emails that we get from Ms. Tacker are on behalf of the J.H. Edwards Company as an administrative assistant. Their business correspondence, as best as I can tell. I don't see any personal information in there. And the history of their correspondence is always through a business entity and not on a personal basis. So I don't know if legal counsel wants to weigh in on any of these thoughts, but again, I think that the policies as we've currently have them drafted speak pretty well. And, again, could be subject of some more thought by board members, but I'm just not inclined to make any recommendations to change anything.
Essentially, this email becomes a public document. So how can you redact anything?
The challenge, the challenge that I'm putting, it's sort of darned if I do and darned if I don't, right? Because
yeah.
I'm darned if I don't share it with my director who's off at another committee or another board. And then I'm darned if I do and it turns into some, situation that, essentially the district's not in the middle of. And I'm always going to favor transparency. That if I get communications, and I believe that a member of the board who's on a committee should be aware of that communication, I'll forward it along. If it has to do with the district as a whole and it's going to relate to an agenda item, then the board as a whole is going to get it. But my judgment is always going to favor being transparent on communications. Certainly when I write emails, I expect that they're going to be reviewed by whomever. When I first started getting my professional license, it was pounded in my head, if I put something in writing, expect that an attorney will read it. And, sometimes it hurts to get criticized for correspondence, but taking care is important, and the public record is a public record, so. And then next page, 10, correspondence distribution, goes back to existing bylaw language. Are correspondence received by the district that are of district-wide concern as reasonably determined by the general manager? And certainly I'm always open to criticism by members. Feedback is okay. From, it's that pressure or that coercion that we talked about earlier, which we want to avoid.
Are we talking about 10? Or premature to them?
It's on page 46 of 102, where it's highlighted the yellow on correspondence distribution. The final form of this is going to have the renumbering.
Why would we need to get stuff every Friday?
That was a historical reference to Friday reports.
I know, but we aren't doing Friday reports. Do we need Friday reports?
So how about in a timely manner?
Yeah, it doesn't,
I've generally followed the rule of trying to adhere to a timely manner as opposed
to
Fridays.
Why wait till Friday if you get it on Monday?
Yeah.
It just... timely manner would make me happier, if that means anything.
Policy 4060. My only thought there is halfway through the page, we have a yellow highlight that says insert table, a described committee and subject matter assignments. I'm more inclined to just provide a general reference because that changes, you know. It can change in a given month. It can change on a year. I think that IWMA subject matter assignment is relatively new. Yeah, I don't think we had that one before. So
no.
I was not going to incorporate this into the policies but provide a reference to it instead. Forty-seventy basis of authority, government code 6100 et sec. The only other one I can think of is that we have a public contracts code that's specific to community services districts, and I could add that. Membership in associations, policy 4080. We do the, as far as the board has, the California Special Districts Association. We also have a couple others for California Rural Water, but operating purposes. But that's the CSDA is the primary board organization that we follow. Policy number 4090, training, education.
Can we go back to that?
Yes.
One? It says a member of the board shall be selected to represent the district. Another member shall be selected as an alternate. Do we have those people designated?
Yeah, so currently President White is our CSDA liaison. We don't have a member on the CSDA board. There's one special district representative and one special district alternate. And I'm thinking it's maybe Napomo and Los Osos. Can't exactly remember. But currently, President White is our board liaison with the CSDA.
Does that need to be reworded then to say liaison?
Wouldn't have to be the president.
Well, I think that it's still okay because it's representing the district, but not actually necessarily on the CSDA board.
Okay. We don't have an alternate, though? So that's
we don't.
Ought we to designate one?
We can.
President Austin can't.
Well.
I don't know what you do as the liaison.
Not much. I'm just saying that this is, they only have one major meeting a year.
Don't we all go?
And we all go, and then they have a couple of luncheons with, if there's speakers or something, that we all go to. But there's no local chapter doesn't have a big board of directors or do a tremendous amount of stuff.
What we might do here is to say that the board may also identify an alternate.
Yeah.
If there's not an alternate, then the general manager could act as the alternate, as a default.
I was trying to think. I think I've been to about 5 meetings.
4090, training, education, and conferences. This gets into the details. This has the language requiring prior approval by the board as a whole. 4095, ethics, discriminatory harassment prevention, continuing education. Outlines some of the legal requirements that we all have for being trained to not do certain things that we're not supposed to do. This also includes the National Incident Management System, which is also included in the recommendations for the Local Hazard Mitigation Plan. So we haven't done that yet.
I was going to say, we haven't done that.
Yeah, no, but we should.
We will. Well, it seems like a lot of this, I'm not sure if I'm even up to date on the ethics and sexual harassment ones.
I think everybody is.
Okay. Oh, yeah, I know I was there. No, I was at that meeting. I thought it was maybe 2 years ago or something.
16, and they should have another one now that everyone's been.
Okay. I was just, my observation is that we need to go to school.
And Carrie is updating that list. That's the one where I think Director Colwell almost got himself into a little bit of trouble, yeah, with the instructor. He was doing a good job of identifying examples of things not to do. Uh, 5010, board meetings. So we have a 5:30 start time.
We skipped 4097
vacancies. I think we've got a lot of practice in that.
Oh. Yeah.
I think we know.
It's pretty much conforms to everything we were recently doing, and it's a reflection of of the legal requirements. 5010 board meetings. You know, we start at 5:30 for closed session, 6 o'clock for regular. Prior board member, that was the best timing that he could do. The question is whether your board likes the timing, would like to have a different timing.
I think it's fine.
If we could push it back to start half an hour later, that would be better for me because I work full time.
6 o'clock. Closed session at
6.
At 6.
How about you?
Yeah, I'll go along with everyone else.
I think 6 might be better.
So we just start the meeting at closed session at 6 and then meeting at 6:30.
Or legal counsel, we can just start the meeting at 6, and if we're in closed session if we don't have any closed session, then we start the meeting at 6. If we started at 6 and we have a 10-minute closed session, we come out and we proceed.
We'll just do like we used to.
Yeah. We'll just have a meeting time that starts at 6.
Sounds good.
Still end at 9, though. It's still 3 hours. 6 to 9 is 3 hours.
Yes.
And that's... emergency meetings.
Does that only give me 20 minutes to talk, Jeff? No, that's public. Total public comment is 20 minutes. What page is that? 58.
Yeah, we could pass 8.
Oh, we're not there yet, Jeff.
Emergency.
Now you're skipping ahead.
Emergency meetings. As determined by the general manager and or the board president. What if the...
What page are you on?
I'm on 5010 down to the end, emergency meetings.
Oh.
I think that other... That any two... That's a place where any two people should be able to call a meeting, or any three people, like two board members and the manager, or...
I'm talking about the emergency, unforeseen, unusual.
Okay, so what about if we do this? Because sort of the behavior, what we do is that in an emergency meeting... I'm the one who's saying, we got a problem, we need to conduct an emergency meeting, and then I'm going to look to the president for concurrence and then call the meeting. But in the event that the president and I aren't around, then I think that the avenue would be, you know, any two board members with the working with legal counsel.
You know, or working with a field supervisor.
Yeah.
I just, it's an emergency. We need to have more than just two people.
Yeah, because what happens if I'm gone and you're gone and Tony's...
on the side of the creek.
Yeah. Okay, so we'll work on some language there that, you know, in the absence of the GM or the board president.
Yeah.
So this section goes a few pages. Any other questions on that?
Yeah, the the fourth paragraph there talks about newspapers, radios, TV stations shall be notified. I don't see anything in here about it posting on our website or anywhere else.
Posting the agendas on the website?
For a
emergency meeting.
Yeah,
on the
a special meeting. I think this is a special meeting. Yeah, this is for a special meeting. Does that need to be updated for the internet age?
Why don't we just say that it needs to be posted in accordance with existing law or something like that, in accordance with legal requirements? Because I do know that it was only in 2013, for instance, where the government code was amended to include if an agency has a website, you have to post your agenda on the website. So
okay.
Certainly some, yeah, things
wow,
do
that took
them
a long time to get that in there.
Well, and they just updated the legislation, too, where it is requiring special districts to have websites, and therefore requires us to put them on the website. This, I think, goes into effect in 2019, unless the district can demonstrate that having a website does. I don't know what the actual language is, because we have a website. But you have a whole bunch of what's called cemetery districts, which operate on, you know, $1,500 a year annual budgets or something. So the intent of the law now is thou shall have a website, but there are some exceptions. So
I
like
it
that.
Doesn't say anything about social media yet, though.
By 2040.
Okay, so we'll work on some edits on that. Any other under 5010 board meetings?
Nope.
5020 board meeting agenda. I do have some follow-up comments. One is the policy on the third paragraph, policy does not prevent the board from taking testimony at a regular or special meeting of the board. However, the board shall not discuss or take action on such matters at that meeting, you know, where the public is making a comment. I would just add, except to consider how the item may be placed on a future agenda.
Yes. Right. Excellent.
And then on the last paragraph, I'm sorry, the second to last, the last sentence, second to last, all information made available to the Board of Directors, except confidential information allowed by state law per legal counsel authority, shall be available for public review prior to the board meeting. And that simply isn't possible. We don't have, but I do like the language which relates to claims, shall be made available for public review no later than when the information is made available to the Board of Directors. So let's say that the day before an agenda, I have new information come in, I want to distribute it to the board, I need to post it to the website. There's other information that just isn't available to your board until the meeting starts, and therefore it'll be make sure that we make it available to the public when the meeting starts. But the key there is that it's made available to the public no later than when the information is made available to the Board of Directors.
Yeah. And prior to a board meeting may mean 5 minutes or 10 hours.
Yeah, and on and again on claims where we have a claim that's submitted and we're going to typically talk about it in closed session, the requirement is that we have to make it available prior to going into closed session.
Yeah.
And so we'll usually bring those to the board meeting then. Board meeting conduct under 5030, legal counsel says that 3 minutes may be allotted to each speaker. Well, I've burned through my 3 minutes a long time ago, Jeff.
Now,
each public speaker.
Okay, if we had 50 people talking on one topic like they do at the Board of Supervisors, may be allotted, I guess that says it.
It's always your discretion. The idea of having a tighter time limit on a particular agenda item then allows your board, the president, to allot more time. And so what we see at the Board of Supervisors sometimes is they say, who will speak in just 1 minute? Who will speak in 2 minutes? Who really wants the 3 minutes? And usually the one-minuters get to come up first, and then the two-minuters, and then three-minuters.
Yes, or you can change it to be, we have so many people here, everybody just gets 1 minute.
Yeah. I don't. Okay, and maximum of 20 minutes. That's.
So again, by having a relatively tighter time schedule on that, it gives you, the president, the ability to say, "Hey, I'm going to provide more time. This is a big item. You know, we might have 2 hours of public comment, but to go from a bigger time allotment and try to squeeze it down, you'll generally get more criticism for that approach.
Okay, so maximum of 20 minutes, and then. We can waive it and go 30 minutes or 40 minutes.
We're getting close. 50-40. Oh. Board actions.
How
and...
How close are we?
Decisions.
We need a break. Sorry.
Yeah, we're
okay.
Almost right there.
Okay.
On 5040, board actions and decisions, the gray items, I think some wordsmithing is necessary because it says approval or rejection of any contract or expenditure. Well, that's not true because I have purchase order authority up to $7,500, and a purchase order is a contract. Next bullet, that's great. Any approval or rejection of any proposal which commits district funds or facilities. Including employment and dismissal of the general manager, of language of which I never like, but I guess it has to stay in there. You know, again, any proposal, no, because we have the purchasing limits. And then approval or disapproval of matters that require or may require the district or its employees to take action or provide services. And approval, I think better language would be approval or disapproval of matters where the board direction is required. Again, because we have a lot of action that Tony has to take because he's got his certificate. You know, he operates the system. So I think these have to be wordsmithed a little bit. Under 2.8, I have highlighted in blue, this came out of the policies, requiring the board to approve all bids of more than $7,500. And that was where, in the prior bylaws, there was an attempt to put a purchasing policy in there. And so board actions and decisions, I think, again, on all these items, we need to be more generic and then deferring to purchasing policies or deferring to budget policies or the approval of the budget. Because when we get into purchase orders, contracts, commitments of funds, and limitation, those purchasing policies tend to have their own details associated with them, like obtaining bids. How many bids do we get? Are they formal or informal? And so my inclination is to strip a lot of this stuff out of here and speak to it more generically. Review of administrative decisions.
Well, I had a question back on 2.8.
Yes.
At the end of the yellow highlight, it says, unless a board member states that he or she is not voting because of a conflict of interest, his or her silence or abstention shall be deemed and recorded as an affirmative vote. And then the next sentence says, a member abstaining in a vote is considered as absent. Is that a little bit of a conflict in those two sentences?
Oh, okay. Ambiguous language or conflict? I'm going to put Jeff next to that one. Did I get Carrie's and Nicole's name on this one, too, anywhere? Yeah. 50-50, review of administrative decisions. I got Jeff on that one, too. Civil procedures. Maybe I can get Nicole on this one. 50-60, minutes of the board meetings. It says, the device upon which the recording is stored shall be kept in a fireproof vault or fire-resistant locked cabinet for a minimum of 60 days. So I think you got to do some research there, Nicole. And that's to put our discs. Yeah. You know, okay, so the other thing is we might be able to avoid that because AGP might maintain copies for us. So if, we'll double-check on that.
Doesn't that all end up on the internet anyway? So why do you need to keep a physical copy in a fire vault?
5-year requirement.
It's not going to be on the internet for 5 years? Can't go back and watch meetings from 5 years ago?
Would it pertain to special meetings? Whether or not recorded?
No, a special meeting, yeah, we might not have that.
Yeah.
Records retention.
Yeah.
And it may be that, so records retention requirements are, you know, we've adopted a policy. A lot of it is guided based on law. And it may be that we cannot utilize somebody independent to maintain our records, but we'll check on that.
Okay.
50-70, rules of order for board and committee meetings. I didn't have any comments or notes on those. Now, in the staff report, I did indicate that I would do a quick preview of 2006-1 because that's kind of our best ordinance that talks about rules and regulations, even though it's not a great one. And it references, internally, it has references to a bunch of other ordinances as well. So all I really want to do is briefly speak to the different articles. Again, rules and regulations, as I previously mentioned, really have to do with our external business practices with constituents. And in Article 2006-1, which Ordinance 2006-1, which is our water system. So Article 1 is just general. That starts on page 79. Article 2 is permit applications. And so it talks about when a constituent wants to get a permit to connect to our system. And a lot of those are then what are the development standards. It also gets into, there's some of the language in here on liability for violations of ordinance, rules, and regulations. And a continuing violation of a public nuisance. So we've had, when people illegally connect or touch our facilities without a permit, then we can take enforcement actions. Article 3, similar but a little bit different, that's applications for service. We require only the property owners to apply for service. That's going to be a very important discussion in 2019 when we get into these because the state legislature passed a law that goes into effect February of 2020, April of 2020 for some agencies that will not allow us to turn off water for non-payment of utility bills. And it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out because the number one way of water entities to make sure that we get paid and have very low allowances for bad debt is by turning off people's water. And there's a lot of people scratching their head about how are we going to deal with it if people think that they don't need to pay for water anymore. CSDA is going to be doing California Rural Water Association is going to do some local conferences, sort of the think tank about how to address that particular issue. And so I just mention it because these rules and regulations are going to have to be conformed to the new state law, and that's going to be an interesting one. We have the ability to put liens on property, and the bottom line, it might just be that property owners may not be very happy if their tenants aren't paying bills and they get liens placed on their property. So I don't know the answer to that particular issue, but it's going to be a priority in these rules and regulations on how to address the change. That's Article 5 that starts on page 17, non-payment of utility bills. Article 6 is maintenance of service connections, meters, and housing, and that tends to talk about what are the district responsibilities versus the property owners, the residents' responsibilities. Our Seabreeze constituent talked today a little bit about the recent leak, that it was on the water supply side of the meter and not the residence side of the meter. That Article 6 may also very well be where we focus in on some of the details associated with Seabreeze and others. Article 7 is promulgation and enforcement of water service requirements. Article 8, meter tests. We often get people who say, that meter can't be right. How in the world could I possibly be using that much water? Well, you know, obviously we don't monitor individuals' water use. We do know of examples where neighbors have hooked up hoses to people who have vacation rentals and are using the neighbor's water for quite a period of time. So there are, you know, examples like that. But the meter test essentially is that if a property owner wants to assert that the meter's bad, we can have it tested. If it ends up being good, they pay for the test, and if it ends up being bad, we pay for the test, and then we make billing adjustments. So it gets into that kind of level of detail. Article 9 is temporary supply from fire hydrants. And then on page 101, miscellaneous references to prior ordinances. And so the intent of cleaning up the rules and regulations is to address all of those other ordinances rather than leaving them hanging out there, and to have a clear and meaningful one document that addresses rules and regulations.
Somewhere in there it said no junkets to Hong Kong. Do you know why?
I have no knowledge of any abuses by prior boards on junkets to Hong Kong, so I'm not sure.
It didn't say anything about boondoggles, though.
Oh! I'd be glad to answer any other questions. That we've sort of run through the agenda item. And
were you going to say anything about this resolution on public records?
Oh, yes, thank you. So with Ms. Tacker's correspondence, this we do have an existing policy on public records requests. It seems to me that that would be appropriate to incorporate. So the CSDA manual doesn't speak to this is a policy on public records requests, and I think it would be good to incorporate that into one of the three sections that we're speaking about anyhow. One of the points here, when I read through the policy, it still seems to me to be good as it's currently written. Making it more concise to fit into the CSDA policy manual might be a good idea. But there's this balancing act that tries to strike in a balance between open government and the individual's right of privacy. And what we're talking about in here is the individual's right of privacy isn't the person who's submitting the public records request. It's the individual whose information might be distributed. So a good example is I want to have the HR records about the general manager. So some of those HR records are going to be public documents, but some of them aren't because the idea is they would invade on my privacy. The easiest one is Social Security numbers. You know, that's part of our HR documents. But this balance, there's two examples that I can bring where we have a challenge in is a document really a public record or not? And the first example was the Goleta Water District in the prior drought, late 80s and early 90s. And they obtained a public records request from a group of individuals who lived in Goleta, and the district had reason to believe that the information was being sought in sort of a vigilante type of an approach, that the group who was trying to seek the information was trying to find out who was using a lot of water and they wanted to do something about it. And the Goleta Water District, and utility customer information is generally considered to be public information. The Goleta Water District, though, found that they were concerned about what might happen, and so they denied it and they prevailed in court because the risk to the individuals outweighed the public's need to know that information. Really case specific. The second one involved the county of San Luis Obispo and a harassment claim that had been filed by an employee against her supervisor. And the Tribune asked for a lot of public records. And what the county did in that situation is they categorically denied everything. And they basically said, made the Tribune take them to the court, and then the judge ruled on which documents could be released and which documents could not be released. Now, the article was, you know, by the Tribune was, well, we win because they got a bunch of public records released. And, you know, fair enough, they did win on a lot of points in that particular case. But the county's strategy was really smart, because what the county wanted to do was avoid distributing a document that the county thought would be public record, but then it was later determined that they shouldn't have distributed it, right? So the county took a very conservative approach in that and basically made the judge tell them what was the public records and did not release anything else. So those were, you know, two really good cases where this balancing act between what is appropriate public record to distribute versus what needs to be maintained confidentially. And so it's always, we can find ourselves in situations where it's a tough balancing act. Whenever we as staff are concerned about it, we turn to legal counsel and get guidance. And again, if we had a situation that was sort of the extreme of what the counties did or Goleta's, then we might find ourselves denying so that the courts make the decision. In those situations, you know, the strategy is really to minimize any legal costs and get to the judge as fast as possible in order to get the determinations made. But again, an example where the district didn't, or the county didn't ultimately make that determination, they let the courts do it.
But how do you craft that into rules and regulations or policies if it's not already?
So for the most part, right, public records are construed broadly in favor of disclosure. There are very specific categories that we know are clear, where Attorney General's opinions have already identified not this, not that, not that. The issue of privacy and this balancing act of the interest of the public versus the interest of the individual is really that's the most difficult case in these, and it's also one of the rarest that you see.
Yeah.
For the most part, if somebody wants something, we'll give them the majority of the document and just redact the personal information out. So It's okay. The policy would just track the basics of existing law with a little asterisk that says always talk to legal counsel first.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. We have any hearing items?
No, but I might recommend, or I do recommend, that was a pretty lengthy discussion. I don't know if the public comment has any follow-up on it.
Oh, yeah, that would be very nice. We would like to call for additional public comment if anybody would like to speak. Yes. Ms. Lowe.
That's unfortunate when you know me by name.
Well, no, you have your... thank you for the courtesy of doing that.
Thank you. I just had a question. In the policy sections that are listed here, the full agenda is not... I mean, the full table of contents from the special districts manual, all those topics are not going to be covered, just the ones that you particularly... had listed. For example, there's language in one of them, I think the 3000 section, that's on encroachment permits or withdrawal of easements and that kind of thing. So that's my question is, every topic that's listed in the table of contents, is that going to be addressed in the next draft?
I will throw that to the management, who is bound to know the answer.
For the next draft, no, not all topics. So today we were focused on series 1000, 4000, and 5000. And what Ms. Cassiola will be doing is going to be focusing on series 2000. And then I'm moving over into the rules and regulations, which are not included in here. There is some overlap. In terms of easements and encroachment permits, we address those in the rules and regulations, and there is also a reference in here. But I think especially with regard to Seabreeg's concerns, that it's really going to be my discussion on the rules and regulations
okay.
that we're going to focus on.
And that will the next time it comes to the board be for adoption that with no further... opportunity for input, or is it up for discussion at any point?
No, all of the policies that we're going to be reviewing, it's going to be at least two steps, and it's all going to depend on how complex they are. Relatively less complex items, we will introduce policies, and then we may seek adoption at the second meeting. More complex topics, it's just not going to be possible to introduce and adopt at a second meeting. We're going to have a discussion of the issues, what kind of research have we done associated with it, establish the background, and then move from background into a draft policy, and then from draft policy into final adoption. So
it's a longer process.
Yeah.
It's a big process.
And the details associated with Seabreeg are really going to require that at least the three-step approach where we're looking at background information, how does that compare to other mobile home parks?
Yeah.
And then once we've been able to review the background information, then we'll move into the policy discussion, the drafts, and then the final approval.
Thank you. That makes sense. I think I understand it said that this first section, these drafts that are the 1,000 section, are going to be pretty obvious, pretty simple, pretty straightforward. I just wanted to make one comment about the item 1030. That's on page 24, if you want to take a look. But here's my comment. Is if I understand that, it basically says... that if there's an issue or a complaint, that you go through the lowest level, you know, or the supervisor, then you go to the general manager, and then the next step is
one board member, the president or the vice president, makes a decision and it's final. And I just had concern about that process, if that was the understanding. That's the third bullet point, I believe, that I may be misunderstanding.
I think what's important is the response by the member of the board of directors shall be final and may be submitted to the board of directors for consideration as a future agenda item. And where we landed with that language was that we can't really have an automatic conduit that any employee complaint is automatically going to get on the Board of Supervisors' agenda. Yet, we also felt like it was important with constituents' complaints that they ultimately have the ability to talk to a member of the Board of Directors. To say that a constituent complaint just stops with the general manager disregards the whole purpose of electing people to public office. So that was the best we could come up with in terms of balancing, you know, the need to make sure that constituents are being heard and they have an avenue to at least a member of the board of directors. The reality is sometimes individuals go straight to a board member who they might know very well. But making sure that, you know, staff and the representative of the board is responsive, while also recognizing that, you know, as a practicality, or it's really impossible to give an automatic conduit to the board as a whole on all items that might be complaints.
Okay. Well, my experience had been, we even got to have a special meeting that you talked about at one point, at least with two of the existing board members. So that was given, I think, a lot of public airing. But it was the word shall that I heard you mention. When you adopt a policy and it says the response of that single board member shall be final, it just didn't seem to fit with the open process we've been having. So I just questioned that wording, if this policy is going to be adopted at the next airing. Thank you very much for your responses.
Certainly, and I think the distinction, again, is the significance of the issue, because when we have issues like that have been raised by Seabreeze, they really aren't just Seabreeze issues. They are a lot about how we're working with all of the constituents in Oceano. The contrast is the individual who simply doesn't believe that that meter is appropriate. You know, we can have such a wide diversity of the type of issues that we're talking about. And a board member might say, well, okay, I know you're not happy, but this is not going to be taken up in a board meeting.
I think that language is a little confusing to me as well. It says the response by the member shall be final, but may be submitted to the board for consideration as a future agenda item. It's like, it's not really final if it may be submitted for consideration by the full board.
So yeah,
it needs a little
massaging
work there. Yeah.
Yeah. Another new paragraph.
And if any linguistic masseuse wants to submit any suggestions, that would be... Okay.
We welcome them. Okay. Received written communication. I think we've covered that. Late received written communication. Future agenda items is where I am.
So...
We're all going to be here. Well, the first meeting in December is the reorganizational meeting, right?
For elections. The appointments for 2019.
Yep. It's when we've been electing officers and...
Yes. In December.
In December, the first meeting in December.
So what I propose is then we'll agendize goals and objectives for the next meeting. I might have some other business items that I need to address too, but I think for the most part I've gotten a lot of board direction on capital projects and sort of the stuff that we're grinding through. So we'll put goals and objectives priorities first. Second, we'll put like the ethics and the Brown Act training. And if we spend a lot of time on goals and priorities and we don't get to Part B, then we can continue that to the first meeting in December.
Would there be any possibility of any action on Five Cities Fire Authority?
Not any action.
Okay, just a report.
Yeah, so I meet with the Chief Lieberman and the two city managers tomorrow. And... depending on the, you know, there might be a good opportunity for an update in November. I'm anticipating the update is probably going to be more like December.
Okay. And for long-range planning, my only other question would be, do we have a second meeting in December?
I don't believe that we do.
The second meeting in December falls on the 28th.
So that would be a pretty challenge. Normally, we don't have a second meeting in November or December. This year, we're going to have November. It would be a struggle to get something out, agenda prep, right before Christmas. And
when's Christmas? Christmas on what day?
Yeah, so it would be the day after Christmas.
Oh, never mind.
Yeah.
Yeah, everybody could work on Christmas Eve and get all the agenda stuff out.
I was going to do it, but, you know, I think, yeah, the rest of the staff might not be very happy.
Okay. Any other business to come before this board tonight? Yes.
Yes, sorry, I had a couple questions.
Sure.
On the 2019 goals and priorities at the next meeting, other than letting the public know that we're doing that, are we... seeking any other opportunities for the public to have input into what our goals and priorities are going to be? Maybe the outreach event on Saturday, or I don't know. I noticed Pismo Beach is having specific meetings to get public input into what their goals and priorities are for next year. I know we're not Pismo Beach, but we do serve the community of Oceano, so it'd be good to get more public input on what they would like to see us do.
You know, and the city of San Luis Obispo does a similar thing where they do broad outreach for goals and priorities. And with cities that have a lot of general government requirements, it really makes sense. We're pretty focused in the number of areas of responsibility. My thought is that when we discuss community goals and objectives, if the board then says, okay, based on what we're talking about, we want to go and seek community input on one or more of those topics, then that might be the appropriate time to do it, as opposed to upfront and in advance. But at least have the discussion here with your board and the district first, and then identify what kind of outreach we might want to do. So, for example, outreach on our solid waste programs, and what are our priorities associated with the solid waste programs? What's the new employee going to focus on? And what kind of community outreach do we want to do on that specifically? So my recommendation would be let's have the meeting, let's have a discussion, and then during that we talk about how we might improve on our community outreach.
I would think so much of what there's so much that we have to do that isn't really optional, like the 13th Street relocation of all that is coming up, and there's other water line, the roads, and there's just a lot of stuff that isn't going to be optional. It's going to have to be done.
And I think that's true for the vast majority of what this district does, is it's things that we are, you know, compulsory, things that we have to do. But we are talking about other programs that are discretionary, you know, whether it's the landscape maintenance or whether it's trying to set up a community garden up on Wilmar by the water yard, or the solid waste and recreation options. Yeah. So.
Funding the fire department.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't need to ask about that one. just one more thing quick.
Yeah.
I noticed that the place plans for the old fire station, it's not on the future agenda items anymore. I want to make sure that doesn't fall off the radar.
Thank
lest
you.
Lest I heard there were issues with the title or something, but make sure we keep on that. Okay. Thank you.
I move we adjourn.
Second.
Meeting adjourned at 8:35.